Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Very good morning, Reg. How are you?
I'm great, thanks, bud. Good to hear your voice. Good.
Big game the weekend.
Sorry?
Big game the weekend.
Oh, yes, absolutely, yeah. The battle is on, no doubt about it. It was a good match during the week, actually. Did you catch the City game?
Oh, I did, yeah. Magnificent.
Yeah, what a great game that was. I mean,
what a rant he had, Guardiola, afterwards.
I was going to ask you about that. I mean, I'm going to mention that to Alan Cawley later as well. I don't know, I think he was way out of line the way he was going on, talking about no chance of winning trophies and this and that and the other. I mean, that's not what you want to hear from your manager.
No, not at all. Kind of where he's playing sort of a bit of mind games. With Arsenal, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, don't forget, Arteta was walking with Guardiola for a couple of years at City, you know, so he'd be a good friend of his and know him very, very well. But yeah, I think it's a bit of the old psychology there being used by Pep Guardiola. But still, at the same time, if you were one of those lads that had played your heart out and won 4-2 from 2-0 down,
yeah,
your manager's ranting away at you like that, saying you're not going to win anything, you'd feel a little bit...
I'd feel very put out. The only thing I was thinking in my head was that maybe, you know, this often used to be the case in our dressing rooms back in the day. There was a face for the media and face for the dressing room. So it was kind of, you know, the manager would come in and he'd say, listen, lads, don't listen to any of the rubbish I'm going to be saying out here in the press conference. Yeah. I'm putting out a special message on a certain angle. But we know that it's actually the opposite that we're trying to do and this, that and the other. So I kind of, when I heard that, I said to myself, that's what he's at. You know, this is a little bit of playing the game. Get the pressure off us a little bit.
I remember I was doing a lunch with Roy Keane at the Aviva.
You love that name dropping, don't you?
I know, yeah. He told me, well, listen to this. He told me that Guardiola and the players, they hardly talk to each other, you know?
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's very interesting.
There you go. I couldn't believe it. I said, what?
No, doesn't make any sense at all now that I don't know how you wouldn't, like, you look at Klopp and you would think the direct opposite. You'd think, you know, there's a great relationship there, and Klopp is obviously under pressure. You know, things haven't gone as well this year and there's loads of people looking for his head, but you know, you kind of feel that there's that rapport between the players. And I always felt that, you know, again, going back to many years ago, my own playing days, if you respect a coach and if you're, it's almost like you're trying to, you know, pay them back for having faith in you or trusting you or whatever, you'll play that bit harder, you work that bit harder. But if there was someone that you didn't,
you want to impress them as don't you?
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. So I find that amazing. That's real interesting insight, all right, that Pep wouldn't have that relationship. Because he's young as well, you know, in the sense that, you know, sometimes you'd say, okay, fair enough, if the players are really young and the manager's really old, you could understand where there might be a gap in mindsets, but not when he's young like that. You'd think he'd be really connected.
I know, it seems a strange one, all right, you know. And you think he'd be sort of buzzing after such a great comeback, you know. I mean, they were booed off at half time. It's quite incredible. I mean, you know, all the championships that they've won, how well they're playing, you know, over the last so many years, you know, since Guardiola's been there, after having no sort of success whatsoever.
Yeah.
They boot their team off at half time and then they come out and win 4-2.
Yeah. I knew they were going to come out in the second half. I just knew it. I absolutely felt it was going to go turn around. I'd say the hairdryer was definitely full blast.
Don't worry. Don't worry.
Yeah. Listen, we were talking last week about the controversy with the match fixing. I saw during the week that the decision was made and 10 of them were banned, and then it's going to the next stage or whatever. So fill us in on the latest with that. With the scandal in Snooker?
Well, yeah. What they've done is they've charged him now. So they've charged him with all different charges, match fixing and betting. Mm. You know, and they listed each player of being charged with.
Yeah.
So they will all have individual cases to answer. And a right of appeal, of course, when the sort of sentences are given.
Mm.
So the sentences should be given by the end of March.
Right.
And that'll be done by an independent panel. It won't be done by World Snooker. It's given to a three-man panel. Mm. It's the same panel who have dished out sentences to jockeys, footballers, whoever it may be.
Okay.
And they will hear each individual case.
Yeah.
And the cases are quite strong. I mean, Yanming Tao, fixing matches and betting.
Yeah.
Xiao Zintong, these two lads are in the top 16. Concerning betting, but not fixing matches with Xiao Zintong. And the list goes on for the different lads. But,
yeah, I read the list, and the age goes, you know, from very young to sort of lads who are more experienced than that. But there doesn't seem to be any way back from it, Ken, does it? I mean, it's...
No.
It's pretty damning.
You know, I mean, for some of the younger lads who were sort of coerced, put under pressure, I feel sorry for them.
Yeah.
But the guys at the top who were fixing matches in the top 16...
Yeah.
I can't say they're going to get heavy bans. You know, yeah. I mean, Reggie, those two lads, one of them had won the Masters, one of them had won the UK and the German Masters, top 16. They're earning lots and lots of money.
Mm.
They're very, very young. They're only 21 and 20, or 20, both 21 maybe, respectively. You know, they have another 10, 20 years at the top of the game. And they go and do this. I mean, that's just greed to me and ridiculous, you know.
Yeah, it is. It's crazy. And
I'm very sad by it, you know. I'm sad and shocked, annoyed as well. But I've known these kids since they were 13, 14, you know.
Yeah, it's frustrating. It's very frustrating to think that they'd go down that road, and especially, as you say, when there's money in it. But obviously, the sums of money involved that they were being offering just tempted them too much, and they made a bad, very bad judgment. And
it's very sad, you know. It was a dark day for snooker, but what I would say on a positive note is that at least we
dealt with it well.
They're going to be guilty. They're going to be handed severe bans. At least we're doing something.
I have to say, it's been dealt with very well.
That are covering things up, Rich, you know?
Exactly. No, 100% agree. I mean, it's been dealt with very, very openly, transparently, and in public. And for, you know, there's been no hiding or covering up, as you say. Yeah. So it's disappointing.
And it looks bad, unfortunately, for Chinese snooker as well. You know what I mean? That have done so much over the last, like, 20 years to promote the game over there, to, you know, set up academies, look after these young lads as well. And give them a helping hand, and this is the way to repay them. You know, it's really, really sad.
Disappointing, no doubt about it. Okay, well, we move on. I know you're a huge tennis fan. There's been loads of controversy around the Australian stuff this week, between not being allowed to go to the toilet, the rows. Like, I don't ever remember there being so many, certainly online anyway, rows with umpires and officials over toilet breaks and using a towel. And it's strange. It's just, like, in the past, I remember McEnroe was the one that stood out because he, you know, if he had a tantrum, it was all over the place. You just didn't do that.
Yeah.
But now it seems to be every match there's a row about something.
I know, it's ridiculous, isn't it?
Very strange.
It's very strange. I mean, they in a way, they try to stop lads in snooker going out after each frame for toilet breaks. But you can't do it, you know. I mean, they said if the guys want to go, they have to go. You know, you can't stop them. You know, they should be allowed. Some of them, as long as they're back in, you know what I mean, in time, like, you know, just after the ref, or just before the ref maybe sets the balls up, they've got plenty of time to do that.
Yeah.
You know? But, I know in tennis, they're drinking a lot of water, they're running around. But
also the length of the matches,
you know,
and the going into the small hours, and you know, it just seems a very strange setup. Unfair, like it just doesn't seem even. How I don't know how the athletes are doing it. Like Murray and these guys are playing 4.5, 5 hour matches.
5 hours, and he finished at, like, after 4 o'clock in the morning.
I mean, how is that even? Like, how do they schedule something like that?
I don't know.
You know, it starts at 11 o'clock at
maybe
night.
Maybe going on at 10 o'clock or something like that. You know, maybe delayed because the match before might have gone on a bit. But Murray, from 2-0 down, came back to win 3-2 and finished after 4 o'clock. It's ridiculous. Oh. I mean, how was he feeling after that? I know he would have been happy, but how was he going to recover after that?
Bursting to go to the Jacks as well. Oh, stop. Yeah, it's very strange. I have no idea. Like, it seems like certainly that tournament needs a total overhaul. You know, it needs to be looked at from a player welfare point of view, between not being able to go to the toilet, no breaks, can't use a towel, and then you're playing till 4 o'clock in the morning. Why would you even bother turning up? I don't know why Novak even bothered. He should have stayed away. There's plenty of other ones you can play in the daytime. A bit of sunshine. Much handier. Yeah. So, you all ready for your beating on Sunday?
No chance, Reg. We're gonna toss the Premiership wide open.
Well,
Casemiro, that's a big loss, though, I must say.
Yeah.
That's going to be a big big gap to fill there. But they've still got other players, I suppose. But it's going to be a cracking game. I'm really looking forward to it.
You know, I am
disappointed with Wednesday. We lost a couple of points there against Palace in the last couple of minutes.
Yeah.
Should have been given a stonewall penalty, usual.
Should have, could have, would have. Yeah. The usual moaning out of you. I know it'll be a great match. I mean, I'll fully admit that the turnaround in United has been fantastic. It's great for the league. It's great for the top of the table as well. See them back winning matches. But nobody's given us a chance yet. We're still staying that nice little...
I'll tell you what, you're playing very well. Playing very well. I like Arteta, actually. I like his passion. And
you see some of those
cameras in the dressing room and that. And you see the passion of...
Oh, yeah, big time.
Of, you know, giving out to the team or trying to, you know... get them going. He's absolutely fantastic. You know,
oh, it's a golden opportunity.
He's got them playing great football.
They have, yeah. No, it's a golden opportunity. They have a great crop of players. They like, even still at top of the table, people are saying they're going to falter. It's not going to happen. It's a golden opportunity just to keep going, just keep doing what they're doing. They don't need to change anything, just keep doing what they're doing.
Yeah,
it's working, and other teams haven't worked it out yet, and there's great passion being played. So look, it'll be a great match on Sunday. I'm really looking forward to it. I can't wait for it now.
Put it this way, I'd rather Arsenal win than City in any way. So
That goes without saying. All right, well, listen, I better let you go.
There's
plenty more to get through.
I haven't heard of them very much lately.
Who?
Liverpool. I haven't heard of them.
No. They're gone. Yeah. News. Okay, time to turn our attention to football now, and there's plenty going on in that area across the water. And delighted to be joined by Alan Cawley. Good morning, Al. How are you?
I'm good, Reggie. How are you?
I'm brilliant, thanks. Brilliant. Really enjoying the football at the moment, I have to say. There's been some really top-quality stuff going on. I was talking to Ken earlier about that game during the week. City, you're kind of going, what's going on here? Is it really falling apart? And then that brilliant comeback in the second half by them put everybody's minds at ease again. Good game.
Yeah, great game, Reggie. And Spurs, I suppose, they needed a response from last weekend against Arsenal because they were well beaten. But you look at City, they go 2-0 up Spurs and you're thinking they're back on track, they're getting that reaction. But as we've seen many times with this Man City team, and it doesn't really matter who he plays because of the quality that they have and the five changes that he made. And there was some serious question marks at half time because they have been in a bad run of form. But then they just come out in the second half and blow Spurs away, and it was amazing really. But I think what was probably most interesting was Guardiola's interview after the match and speaking about they've lost their fire and their intensity and desire and stuff. So maybe it was just his way of giving them a kick up the backside because he knows just how much pressure Arsenal are putting on them.
It was interesting. I was talking to Ken about this a little bit earlier on. I mean, I didn't agree with that sort of rant from Pep. I don't think players should be hearing their manager talking in that way. But as I said to Ken, it might be that that's just the persona for the media, and behind the scenes in the dressing room, he's telling the lads a totally different story, because I have seen that been done in the past with coaches where they're going, look, don't mind anything I'm saying here. This is all just a game I'm playing. I really am backing you. So it could be that. But at the same time, Ken mentioned that he was at a lunch with Roy Keane, and Roy said that Pep and the players don't actually get on, which I found surprising.
Okay, that is interesting, yeah. And I suppose you don't have to like each other, right? You know, you're professionals, really. You'd want some sort of kind of respect. That's the most important thing. And once the respect is there, I think that's fine for anyone. But and you're not disrespecting your manager. And to be fair to the players, they realise they're playing in such a brilliant team under a brilliant manager. So if they do go and disrespect Guardiola and then he bins them or whatever, they won't want that. It's not good for their career. So it's an interesting observation. And you think back even his time at Barcelona where he was loved and adored, but he didn't get on with Ibrahimovic when he came in. So there's certainly kind of history there in terms of maybe Guardiola not getting on with everyone, but I think that could be the case for every manager, to be fair, because you're not going to like everybody, but once the respect is there. But it was unusual to hear the rant afterwards. We don't usually get that. as you said, it might be something that in the dressing room behind the closed doors and away from the media, something different. I don't know. I think he was fairly honest in what he was saying. And you look at De Bruyne, who we've spoken about recently as well, about when De Bruyne plays with the fire in his belly, he's outstanding. And then De Bruyne wasn't playing the other night. And then he's speaking about players losing their fire and losing the intensity. So there may be something in that in terms of the players and them not getting on at the moment, but they still have serious quality. And it might be just his way of giving them a kick up the backside, because they know Arsenal are really a serious threat to the title challenge this year.
They are. Yeah, no, funny, I've been saying it for a long time. I think De Bruyne, they're far too dependent on De Bruyne. Mm. But, you know, because he is such an amazing player, but they're not the same team without him, there's no question about it. But then, contrast that, you go to Jurgen, and maybe the impression that's given off there is that all the players love him and they've got this big happy family thing going on. But certainly amongst a few of the fans from Liverpool's side now, The love affair with Jurgen might be coming to an end.
Yeah, and I think with these managers, well, they're so good, Reggie, and Guardiola spoke there about being at the club for 7 years. It's hard to keep everybody going and hungry and motivated. Obviously, Ferguson was the best that we've ever seen at it in terms of the years he was doing it. But you do have to come up with ways of keep kind of, I suppose, giving them something, as we say, the fire in the belly and to give them something to fight for. And they need a challenge sometimes because they're that good, the players. I think with Klopp, he's been so good over the years as well, and you think of the season they had last year. I cut them a little bit of slack because you have to remember back last year, Reggie, they played every single match that was available to play. I've never heard that before from a football team. Yeah. The four major competitions, and they were involved in everything and getting to the final and played every single match. So there has to be some sort of a hangover from that. That's not to excuse their form either, but I think defensively they're so weak. They still score, they still average, I think, 1.9 goals a game, which is in and around Klopp's era. Throughout his era, that's what they were always averaging. Mm. And they still have the firepower, and you look at the amount of goals they scored this year, 34, but they've conceded 25, Reggie. And when they were winning everything and doing so good, they were conceding less than a goal a game, whereas now they're conceding 1.4 goals a game, and that's obviously what's killing them, those defensive issues. Yeah. And I'd love to see Klopp just maybe embrace the challenge instead of whinging about it and getting on with it and trying to get them back to the level that they were at.
They have a tricky one against Chelsea now today at 12:30. Funny enough, I see that being a draw.
Yeah, and obviously Chelsea, for their own reasons, Potter needs a result and he's desperate for a result, and we want to see him succeed and do well too. So it's a big match, which normally you'd think would be up near the top of the table, but obviously the clubs are struggling at the moment, which makes it a little bit more intriguing in that sense as well, that the two managers are struggling and both desperate for a result for both differing reasons.
Yeah, and another team that are managing to keep it going, and I think wasn't it a very late winner last week? Newcastle sitting in fourth position and looking good for it.
Yeah, and being phenomenal, really, Reggie. Yeah. Like, we're talking about conceding goals there. They have the best defensive record in the league. I think they've only conceded 11 and has them up where they are. And as you say, to have the crowd behind them, and you look at that late goal carrying them towards the end last week, and they get the result as well. So they're there on merit. And I know, obviously, the takeover, and there was a lot of negative publicity about that, and rightly so, and the money that's coming in. But the team that they have assembled there, they haven't spent millions on that team whatsoever. There's a lot of kind of what you'd call journeyman English players there. Willock, Dan Byrne, the likes of these lads. But he's doing a brilliant job, Eddie Howe. He really is.
We'll talk in a minute about the big one tomorrow, but I want to go to the other end of the table. There's a really interesting clash going on, West Ham and Everton, two teams that I did not expect to see in 18th and 19th place respectively, battling it out to stay in the Premiership, and a huge game in West Ham today.
Yeah, massive game, and both managers under serious pressure. Where do you think, how can they even get themselves out of this? And of course, the only way of getting out of it is by getting a result. But I think David Moyes has a little bit more credit in the bank because of what he did last year. And they've obviously spent money on Danny Ings. And you'd like to think he was involved in that, Moyes. And they're saying to him, look, bring in a couple of players and try and get yourselves out of this. But you look at Lampard, and I just see no way out of it for him and for Everton. And the turmoil that's going on there at that club behind the scenes as well. The board stayed away from the match because of threats to their own safety last week. So it's a real toxic environment there at the moment with Everton, and it's a massive game today, but I think West Ham will beat Everton, and I think Everton will be relegated, Reggie.
Yeah, it's looking very bad for them at the moment. There's no question about it. Then the big one tomorrow, obviously, from myself and Ken, we're having a good crack around this earlier on. I'm nervous about it. I do think Arsenal are going to get the result, but I am nervous. United are playing well, but we're playing very well. So it's sizing up to be a bit of a cracker.
Yeah, the two foreign teams, Reggie, and Arsenal, of course, have been the story of the season. They've been amazing, and we've spoken at length now at this stage throughout the season, and at the early part we were wondering, could they keep it going, could they sustain it? I was so impressed with what Arteta was doing behind the scenes and the great insight into that documentary and stuff, and the questions that have been posed to them, because in recent years, as you well know, everybody says they have a soft underbelly, but he seems to certainly have addressed that issue. And you look at them now, there's a resolve about them, a steeliness, to have the quality as well, the football that they're playing defensively, they're sound, they've continuity in their team selection. But they've been absolutely brilliant, Arsenal. Really, really good. And tomorrow, United are going into the game in really good form themselves. So it's just a pity Casemiro suspended for them, because he's been obviously a massive difference to that midfield area. It'll be interesting to see what he does. Will he bring Fred in? But I don't think Fred is as good to do the job as Casemiro does on his own. So he might bring in McTominay alongside Fred, push Eriksen on, and maybe sacrifice Anthony and play Fernandez wide right, what he's done in the past before as well. So it'll be interesting to see, but you'd have to fancy Arsenal. But I think it'll be a really good game with two clubs in really good form.
Yeah, no doubt about it. City have Wolves, of course. They'll get the job done on that one. I can't see there being any major shocks there. But the other one that could be a bit of a good battle, Leeds, Brentford.
Yeah, Leeds, Brentford, and of course, Leeds, again, a manager under serious pressure. I'm not convinced with this Jesse Marsh at all. But to be fair, they had a brilliant result during the week in the Cup. You'd like to think that'll give them a bit of a confidence boost going into the league, because their league form is really, really poor. And Thomas Frank is a manager who's kind of is very much on the rise. He's been absolutely brilliant, and his CV is always looking more and more impressive as the weeks go by with Brentford, with the job that he's doing. So a tough game, but Leeds need to get back on track in the Premier League.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Okay. Tell me, have you looked at getting the podcast back and going?
We do, Reggie, yeah. Hopefully now coming, obviously the season's kicking off, I think, on the 19th of February, and we're hoping to get it back up and running for the new season, yeah, definitely.
Okay, and then finally I see your man, Ronaldo. He's still scoring goals, albeit in, we'll call it the Kiddies League, it nearly seems at this stage. But
it's like scoring goals in over 35 football, Reggie. Even I don't count those goals.
Yeah, I did. I kind of felt that way a little bit myself, you know. It's kind of a sad way to end up, but if you can't score them, Gare, he's no chance of scoring them anyway. But I've no problem. His bank account is looking all the better for it.
Yeah, well, it's sad the way it's gone, and that's where he's ended up, you know, because it would have been brilliant for the likes of him in the career that he's had to bow out at the top, but
yeah.
Spoiled brat, Reggie, spoiled brat.
That okay, it's time for us to turn our attention to rugby now. Big weekend ahead of all of the Irish provinces. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Will Slattery of the Irish Independent and the Left Wing Podcast. Morning, Will, how are you?
Good, thanks, Reggie. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. Great indeed. Yeah, enjoyed last weekend. There was some great rugby on, no doubt about it. You were spot on in nearly everything you were talking about. Results going certain ways. I suppose Ulster being the ones that maybe kind of. We said they needed to put in a bit of a performance, and they did, albeit failing at the end, but a better performance, I suppose.
Yeah, they showed a lot of fight, to be fair. Like, the conditions kind of, like, I would have a bit of an asterisk on the game generally, because it was such terrible conditions that neither team really was able to play a whole lot of rugby. Result like that, you know, they had a lot of opportunities for digging in. But, like, I wouldn't be as positive as some other people about the result. Like, they, you know, they had a lot of opportunities, especially at the end of the first half. They had 3 5-metre lineouts in a row. They had a couple of chances in the second half as well that they kind of passed up, and then they concede right at the death. Now, getting the bonus point away means that potentially this evening's game could be a de facto knockout tie against Sale. They're at Kingspan Stadium. They've only played, I think, one home game at Kingspan in the last, you know, period, where they've kind of been off the boil a little bit, because of obviously that game was moved to the Aviva Stadium against La Rochelle first time around. So they should have a better effort, you know, tonight at home. They've picked a quite a strong team. Big day for a lot of guys who were left out of that Ireland squad as well. People like Nick Timoney, Michael Lowry, who haven't been playing well, and Jacob Stockdale, who actually got into the squad but is playing worse than both of them.
Yeah.
So I'm very intrigued to see how some of these guys go. Like, if that squad announcement didn't give them another kick up the ass, God, their backside must be redder off. I expect a bit of a kind of a backlash tonight, given they're back at Kingspan, where they usually play pretty well.
It's hard to predict that one, though, isn't it? I mean, Sale are, they're a decent side.
Yeah, they are. They're kind of been one of the success stories of the season in terms of a team who maybe weren't as mapped as some of the others. They're mm-hmm. second in the Premiership. They're very stingy defence. Their packet, you know, is very big. And, you know, they added Johnny Hill over the summer. But they are missing a couple of guys, especially in the front row. Acker van der Merwe, the hooker brother of Duane van der Merwe, has been rested. You know, their first choice props aren't there either. Kobus Visa picked up a red card last weekend in the second row, so he's missing too. Tom Curry's injured. So it is a kind of an understrength Sale pack, which could tip the balance because that is kind of their area of strength. And they still have Manu Tuilagi, but you know, behind the scrum, Tom O'Flaherty, you know, who people might be familiar with from when he was playing with Exeter Chiefs. But I think the weak in Sale side, the Tom game a few weeks back and they didn't turn up. But again, like, they have to produce a performance. You know, they picked a strong team. We were saying this again about the Benetton game a few weeks back, and they didn't turn up. There's no excuses tonight. They have a Champions Cup quarterfinal, last 16 place, most likely in their grasp were they to win. So they have to get that done. Now, they might be ended up playing Leinster potentially in the last 16, but just even to get a bit of momentum back into their season, like, it says a lot that a loss last weekend is being treated as this breakthrough. Yeah. When in reality, they actually threw the game away again in many ways.
Yeah, yeah, it does say a lot about where they're at, but yeah, as we said last week. And funny enough, a talk as well, I was reading during the week of Dan McFarlane being looked at by, was it Leicester or someone that I saw that he was being checked out by?
Yeah, there's been talk of that. There's been a few Leicester rumours, given that, you know, they lost at home to the Ospreys last night. What was a cracking game, to be fair, and a lot of credit to the Ospreys, who've had a really good couple of weeks. But you're running aground in Ulster. I'd be Dan McFarland. It might be a good time for him to maybe take that little wrapper, because it looks like things are running aground in Ulster. I'd be surprised to be in. I don't know why Leicester would kind of go for him if he's having a kind of a nightmare season in Ulster.
That's what surprised me more than anything was that I would have thought that his standing at the moment wouldn't be at that level, because, you know, you can't really judge it as being success with the results that Ulster have gotten the last number of years. So that's why I was raised eyebrows more than anything, I think, when I saw that being mentioned. But anyway, we'll see. We'll watch it. We'll see what happens. More importantly, Munster. It says it here in the Irish Times, they don't look like 14-point underdogs away to Toulouse today, but that's what the spread is. And I'm somewhat surprised, because I think Munster have performed better in recent times. But your thoughts on going away to Toulouse?
Yeah, it's kind of twofold. Like, I agree with you on Munster and your team. This is a kind of a full-on Toulouse side. This is the biggest test they've had. You know, I know they played Leinster and Stephens Day, but that was a rotated Leinster team. This is a kind of a full-on Toulouse side who, to me, look very clued in. I think they're the team closest to Leinster in terms of, you know, favourites for this tournament. I think they're going to have a big say in this competition. They look really hungry. They know if they win with a bonus point tomorrow, they'll be top of their side of the pool, which will give them home games, like much like Leinster on the other side, if they win all the way through. So I think they're going to be really clued in for this. Munster, I think they will struggle tomorrow. I think it's a step above where they're at the moment. But conversely, if they do go and put in a good performance, play the way they've been playing recently, and get some change out of Toulouse, even if they don't win the game, if they get a losing bonus point playing well and playing that style of play, it will just give them more confidence that they're on the right path. Because we've seen them come up against sides like this in the past. And, you know, they've got to a certain level with that game plan, but they haven't been able to put them away. If they can get close again with this new game plan, given they've only been bedding it in for a couple of months, I think it'll actually be, you know, a very good positive sign. And also, they're most likely going to be into the knockout stage anyway, so it'll be a little bit of a free shot potentially. So maybe that might free them up a little bit more. So it'll be very interesting to watch. They picked, you know, a pretty strong team. Obviously, the Carberry-Crowley situation has been very interesting, given Carberry was left out of the Ireland squad. He's playing, obviously, against Toulouse, so it's a huge game for him as well.
Yeah, massive. Yeah, we'll talk about the Irish squad a little bit later, all right? But it's a massive one. He has to sort of, you know, lay down a bit of a marker and open a few eyebrows around that. But we'll see what happens. We'll raise a few eyebrows, should I say. We'll have a look and talk about that in a minute. Just to finish with the Champions Cup with Leinster, obviously having Racing at home, a game that Leinster just look so on point at the moment. It's unreal. I don't see Racing causing any issues.
No, neither do I. Like, even if you look at the Racing team sheet, it actually, it's funny, you look at today and you're thinking Stuart Lancaster's going to Racing at the end of the year. I would be more concerned if I were Stuart Lancaster than Leinster, looking at what Racing have produced so far this season and looking at that squad, which even from, say, 2-3 years ago when they lost to Exeter in the Champions Cup final, they're down a huge number of players from that squad that were, you know, that were very, very competitive. They just, they're kind of like a mediocre French side now. You know, it could come back to bite me come 5 o'clock, but like Leinster are 25-point favourites.
Yeah.
This is Racing's pretty much their strongest team by maybe one or two players. I agree with you. Leinster do look kind of similar to what I said about Toulouse. They just look really dialed in. They're so determined to get 20 points out of 20 points, have that home track. And I don't think it's kind of a complacency or looking ahead. They're just so driven to get to that final day in Dublin and send off Sexton and send off Lancaster with that Champions Cup trophy. I don't think it's an arrogant thing or a cockiness or a complacency. I just think they're just so clued into it. I just don't see them being beaten. And I think today they'll go out and I think they'll win well, and I think they'll get that bonus point win, and I think they'll wrap up that top spot. And then, as I mentioned earlier, it could be Ulster coming to the RDS to the Aviva Stadium just after the Six Nations, which would add a little bit of spice to it. And Obviously, there's a lot of rugby to be played. And by the end of this weekend, we'll know the path various teams will have to a potential final in Dublin. That's what kind of makes it a bit exciting. I think the tournament's got actually a bit of a shot in the arm the last two weekends, partly because the Ospreys have had so many upsets. Like, they beat the French champions and the English champions, and it's kind of thrown the cat amongst the pigeons a little bit. So there's still a lot to play for in terms of seeding. Obviously, Leinster are probably going to lock up number one seed, but there's a lot of intrigue in terms of who might play who and where Munster and Ulster might end up. So I actually think, given we criticised it quite heavily at the start, and justifiably so, I actually think the tournament's rebounded a little bit. Like, you saw Lyon getting a good win last night. That's against the Bulls. Yeah. Like, they're back in the mix. So yeah, I'm a little more positive about the tournament than I was a couple of weeks ago.
Well, certainly last night's game, the Leicester Ospreys game, was very old school. Two teams just going hell for leather at it. It was a great game of rugby to watch.
It was.
It really was. Okay, just to finish on Connacht then, they're away to Newcastle. Two teams opposite ends of the table, obviously. But Connacht needs to be just a little bit careful. That's a result that I'd like to think that they'll get.
Yeah, and it's actually, the results broke really well for Connacht last night. Toulon failed to get a bonus point at home to Zebre, and Glasgow drew a bat. So if Connacht can go and get a bonus point win in Newcastle, not an easy task, because Newcastle have picked a relatively strong side, because they can actually qualify with a victory. Connacht will lock up, I think, a second place at least in the standings, which will mean they will likely have home games in the sports grounds if they can keep winning. That's a massive card, because when you saw the fixtures over the weekend, you would have presumed Toulon would have won well against Ebre, and Glasgow, Bath hadn't won a single game. So Connacht have a huge opportunity today. Maybe they probably would have wished they might have picked a slightly stronger side. Obviously, Bundiaki is still out in the cold there. Like, he would have been, had he been, I suppose, in fit and form and attitude-wise in the right place, he would have been a huge addition. But it's a massive opportunity for Connacht today. They could take a massive step forward to having a good crack at this Challenge Cup if they can get a bonus point win today. A win of any description will give them a home, at least one home knockout game, but if they can get that all-important bonus point as well, they'd be in a really good place going into the knockout stage.
Okay, you segued very nicely for me to my next point, which is Bundiaki, and what's going on? I mean, left out in the cold again, yet included in the Ireland squad. Well, you know, there's definitely an edge to Andy Friend that I haven't seen before when he's asked questions there in around the Bundiaki issue. Is there a little bit of getting too big for his boots down there, or what's going on, do we think?
I'm not sure if it's getting too big for his boots, given, like, to be fair, he's had offers to go to other provinces, to go elsewhere over the course. He's been around almost a decade, and he stayed loyal to Connacht. But it's been a very stop-start season for Bundiaki. He got sent off for that, you know, reckless clear-out at the very start of the year, missed a load of games, came back for Ireland, you know, scored that try. He was back in the good books. And seemingly, the attitude has been off over the last couple of weeks at Connacht. Now, I'm not sure exactly how that's manifesting itself on the training ground, but for whatever reason, however he's behaving, or his application hasn't been good enough, Andy Friend has opted to keep him on ice for what's been a very crucial period of Connacht season. They had big interpros, they've had European games, two European weekends in a row that he hasn't played. It helps when you have a young guy like Cathal Ford, who's kind of slotted into the team and played so well. And they actually do have a lot of centres, so he maybe has a little bit of a luxury there to send a message. But it's massively concerning for Andy Farrell. Like, Bundiaki's one of a number of players who go into the Six Nations squad. you know, not having played a lot of rugby or not having played very well. Now, thankfully, the core of the team is still very much intact. That Leinster spine, as you mentioned, are really clued in and playing well. But it, to be fair, it hasn't just been the Leinster show and the green jerseys come on. There's been huge key contributions made by people from all over the provinces. So you want all of the guys coming in a good place. And that's just not the case, certainly for Bundiaki and one or two others as well, who you'd be a bit concerned about their form line going into the Six Nations.
Indeed, yeah. Okay, let's talk about that squad then, announced during the week. I suppose the biggest surprise for a lot of people was Joey Carberry. For others, it was many people were commenting that this was on the cards for a long time and probably should have happened before now. But we see Carberry missing out at the expense of his teammate Jack Crowley and Leinster's Ross Byrne, who's been thereabouts for a long time and overlooked by, you know, the Irish setup, many would say unfairly so, for quite some time. So we're looking at Crowley and Byrne being the backups to Sexton in around that 10 jersey. And as you said, Munster playing to lose today. Carberry needs a big one today to kind of make Farrell maybe sit up and take notice. But were you surprised, or is it the right direction that Farrell is going in?
I was extremely surprised, and I think everyone else was too. I didn't see it mapped or tipped or talked about in any squad preview or any podcast or, you know, any newspaper article. I don't think you can underplay how big a call this is. Like, Joey Carberry has been the second out half for Ireland pretty much when he's been fit for the last 5-6 years. Now, obviously, he missed that huge chunk of time, but, you know, even last year, like, you know, he started in Paris. He saw out games against the All Blacks. I don't think he's done a huge amount to justify that position he had, but he still had that position. So for Andy Farrell to throw him overboard in the final Six Nations before a World Cup and go with Jack Crowley, a younger guy who isn't even starting it out half, and Ross Byrne, who, to be fair, has been playing really, really well for Leinster, and, like, we might look back and see that kick against Australia as the, you know, the turning point in his career, or kind of the spark that reignited his international ambitions. Because up to then, I think the jury had almost returned its verdict that he was a guy who you could trust to come into the Leinster machine and keep it going in the right direction. But was he an international quality out half? I think people had said he wasn't, but he's back in the mix. And in terms of, you know, who's more likely to be on the bench for that Welsh game, I think Andy Farrell has taken a real shine to Ross Byrne over the last couple of months. I think he really admired the guts he showed with that kick. Mm. I think he's been very impressed with how he's been playing for Leinster. Like, Sexton's barely played for Leinster this year. They have not missed a beat. Ross Byrne has been humming. I'll be very interested to see how he goes again today, because I know we're saying they're huge favourites. But he's going up against Finn Russell. He's going up against a physical team. If he can keep Leinster ticking over again, he goes in a very strong position. Considering Jack Crowley's not playing it out half, like, I think it's like that Welsh game, Johnny Sexton's coming back from an injury. Who would you trust more to come off the bench in that match and steer Ireland home? At this point, you'd probably say Ross Byrne, which, you know, is a pretty drastic turn of events. But for Carberry, yeah, he needs to start first and foremost in Toulouse on Sunday and produce a big performance. This could be what he needs. I mentioned the kick up the arse for Ulster earlier.
Yeah.
I feel like Carberry has gotten a lot of opportunities, but I don't think he's taken them. Like, I very rarely come away from a game thinking Joey Carberry stamped his authority on that game. He, you know, like a Johnny Sexton kind of, like, authoritative performance, drove them around the pitch, showed his skills on the game line. I feel like we haven't seen that in a long time. So on form, it's probably a fair enough call, but just with the context of how much game he's gotten in that second out half position, it's a major call by Andy Farrell. He's gotten a lot of them right. I'm very interested to see how this one pans out.
As am I. It's going to be very interesting. I think the fact that he has a lot of players around him as well, Ross Byrne, that he plays with week in, week out, and as you said, he's been predominantly playing for Leinster as a starting choice 10. So with so many Leinster players around him, from a coach's point of view, that would make me feel that he slots in that little bit easier maybe than Carberry, and kind of knows the players around him that bit more, and that could be a factor too. But I think he's earned it. You know, I really do think he's kept his head down, he's kept his mouth shut, he's just got on with his day job and tried to play his way back into the mind, and that seems to be what's happened now. The other one, of course, Stockdale, as you said, form not great. Keith Earls is another one. He's there included, but, you know, hasn't had a whole lot of game time, hasn't had a whole lot of great form. I know he's an amazing player, but again, getting on a little bit. A couple of strange decisions maybe included.
Just one last thing on Ross Byrne before I answer that. Like, this could be the next few months could could reshape Ross Byrne's career. Like, Johnny Sexton's retiring at the end of the year. Yeah. Ross Byrne will be the main man of Leinster. That means no longer will he have to play the 75% of the season and say, Johnny, here's the 10 jersey for the Champions Cup semi-final. Yeah. Ross Byrne will be the main man. Mm. So if he can get back into the Ireland 2023, if he can have a few good, you know, seeing out games off the bench, we could come this time next year. He could be the starting Leinster half. He could potentially be Ireland's next out half. Potentially, I know I'm looking far in the future, yep, but just the way things could break. So it's a massive period for Ross Byrne over the next 6 to 8 months to nail a place in the Ireland squad first and foremost, but then to possibly take over from Johnny Sexton as the, you know, front line 10 for all those big games for Leinster. So huge opportunity there. Just on Stockdale and Keeter, baffling decisions, both of them for me. Like, I've said it a lot on this show about Stockdale. I've watched him a lot this season. He is devoid of confidence. It was interesting. I just Ulster tweeted out their program for the weekend. It was an interview with Stockdale, so I clicked into it to see what he was saying, and he mentioned how much he's valuing Andy Farrell, showing faith on him, considering he's coming in his own words, at the bottom of the pecking order. But Keith Earls isn't even in the 23-man squad for Munster again this weekend. So that's back-to-back European games where Keith Earls hasn't been deemed good enough for a place even on the bench. I get the feeling that he's on 98 caps, and they're kind of like, he's such a good guy, they almost want to get him those 2 caps, and then maybe he'll ride off into the sunset then. I don't think that's a good way to pick your squad. I think Shane Daly and Calvin Natch would have been more deserving over both of those two lads. Like, that's why it's funny, like, Andy Farrell's dropped Carberry on form, but he's kept a few lads in the squad who aren't playing good rugby at all. But when you kind of built up that reservoir of goodwill and wins under your belt that Andy Farrell has, you can kind of get away with some of those decisions. And to be fair, his antenna's been very good in the last, you know, 18 months, 2 years. So we'll see how it plays out in the Six Nations. Certainly a more interesting squad than we usually get. And there's a lot of, you know, very interesting kind of storylines and subplots. Because we know the starting team really for the most part. But there's some bench spots and a few other guys who could play their way in. That'll kind of be the real intrigue ahead of the Wales game, I think.
It's time to get the latest GAA roundup with Declan Drake.
Thank you, Reggie. As the inter-county GAA season continues to push towards the start of the National Leagues over the next couple of weeks, there is one very special occasion with Dublin involvement tomorrow, as Croke Park hosts the AIB All-Ireland Senior Club Championship Finals. Our focus is on the football decider, as Kilmacud Crokes look to secure a third title at national level. Our county and provincial champions take on the Glen of Derry from 3:30. Robbie Brennan's Purple and Gold playing their fourth consecutive game at headquarters tomorrow afternoon, having previously played twice in the Leinster Championship and against Cairns O'Rahillys in the All-Ireland semi-final, a game that they won by 3 points, 114-14. After that victory at headquarters a couple of weeks ago, I spoke to Croke's boss Robbie Brennan outside their dressing room. Delighted to be joined now by Robbie Brennan, the manager of Kilmacud Crokes, who's just led his side to back-to-back AIB All-Ireland Club Final appearances. Hopefully it's a victory in a couple of weeks' time. But the important thing, Robbie, is at least you and the team are there. A real roller coaster of an hour's football out there again today.
Certainly was, yeah. Roller coaster is a good description. It was up and down, and we struggled at times. We looked comfortable at times, and then ultimately, I suppose, just about scraped it out in the end, yeah.
2 points up at half time, 8-6. Did you feel, making your way across the field to the Cusey Stand dressing room, that you could have been further ahead with the goal chances that you had?
Yeah, we felt we left a bit behind, but I think they did as well. So maybe 3-4 points spread might have been comfortable enough at half time, but two made it tight, and they came out and got the first point in the second half, which put us under pressure again. So as I say, no, it was a real job of digging it out towards the end.
But then, having missed those goal opportunities in the first half, Hugh eventually took the third one that came the team's way 5 minutes in, and you kicked on from there, really.
Yeah, we did. I think there was still times we dropped off, and as I say, at the very depth there, it was looking very dodgy, like they might get a goal and we could be still out there now with extra time. So for that reason, I'm delighted that we got it done, yeah.
When you see that ball dropping into the square, I know there's plenty of purple and gold shirts back there, but there's still just a slight fear in the back of their mind that it could end up in the net.
Yeah, and it always seems there must be something cursed about that goal up in Hill 16. It happened with Ballyhale and Ballygunner as well, the hurling, and obviously ourselves in Kilcoon. It seems to be that end, but yeah, my heart was in my mouth at that stage, but thankfully we got it out of there.
You've managed the expectation well coming into this game. We spoke spoke to you on Thursday, you were nice and relaxed and calm and that, and maybe the hour out there might have put a little bit of years on you, so to speak. But next couple of weeks now, again, preparing for a final, and there'll be talk about maybe Paul Mannion 2 weeks on, perhaps being available to you as well. But I think it was a testament to the team today. Didn't say an awful lot of Shane Walsh, but yet you came through on the right side of it, and well.
Yeah, I think Shane's work rate was brilliant across the board, but he was on a good lad, you know, and as I say, the opposition are entitled to hold him as well at times. And but yeah, it'll be, look, the normal 2 weeks for us. We're so used to that every 2 weeks type of prep now, so nothing will change for us. And maybe the experience of last year is a good thing from the club's perspective. We can just plan ahead as normal. And yeah, with Paul, who knows, another couple of weeks under the belt, he might be closer. Yeah.
And we here at Dublin's Talking Sport take the opportunity of wishing Robbie and the Crokes crew every success in their endeavours to bring the Andy Merrigan Cup back across the M50 tomorrow to Park de Burka. Turning now to ladies football, and Dublin, last year's beaten semi-finalists, opened our 2023 Lidl National Football League Division 1 campaign this evening. And no better way to do it than welcoming All-Ireland champions Meath, back-to-back All-Ireland champions Meath indeed, to DCU St Clair's from 5:15. Blues boss Mick Bowen, a four-time All-Ireland winning manager pre-Christmas, was ratified for his seventh year in charge in his second spell. On the playing side of things, of course, he did lose Skerry's Harps legend Lindsay Davey, who after 18 years has hung up her inter-county boots. Well, shortly after announcing that retirement, I spoke exclusively to Lindsay. We turned our attention to 2023, which she feels will be a very interesting year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting next year to see how things go. Like, teams are going to kick on again, and I think the standard's always increasing, and I suppose it's up for Dublin, I suppose, to, you know, get back next year and get back competing, trying to fix whatever we can, what we got wrong last year.
And of course, their first league match and their first championship match is against the same opposition in Meath as well, a couple of months apart. This year's league campaign is going to be particularly crucial for Mick. I mean, he's lost yourself. He may lose one or two more, we're not sure yet. But to develop the squad that can get the county back up there again next year.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I know Mick so well, and look, he'd be looking at everything from, you know, the season gone and we're on areas that we can improve. And look, the girls will be determined as ever. Like, there's such talent and strength and depth within the squad to get them back. And, you know, I've no doubt they will get back there. Like, and look, I suppose I think the positive is with Mick staying on, had he probably stepped away and if we had a few other girls gone, you probably would have been worried about, you know, with the team going into transition. But I really hope with Mick staying on and that he can really drive things on from the season gone.
Finally this week, Reg, Dublin hurlers wrap up their Walsh Cup campaign with a trip to Westmeath in Kinnegad tomorrow afternoon from 2 o'clock. Micheál Donoghue's Blues will be looking for a second win in 3 starts in the competition, having defeated Antrim on the opening day. Last week's 121-15 point reversal to Galway, though, at Parnell Park, has ended their active interest in this year's competition. The Dublin management will be looking for big performances all round and a confidence booster ahead of the start of the Allianz National Hurling League in a fortnight's time. The Blues will be on the road to face Waterford at a yet unknown venue due to the fact that Waterford's Walsh Park is out of commission.
It's time for NFL. I'm delighted to be joined, as always, by Stephen O'Brien. Morning, Stephen. How are you?
I'm good, Reg. Oh my God, Saturday football, buddy.
Yeah.
You know, it's on today, it's on tomorrow, it's top quality games. I mean, you can't not be happy, you know?
Absolutely. Why wouldn't you be? It was, and you know, wild card weekend lived up to its reputation. Incredible game, Jags versus the Chargers. I was reading online during the week about one punter who at halftime put on $1 million to win $11,000 in the Chargers versus Jags game when the Jags were 27-0 down. But they came back. Your man lost his million for $11,000. What a game.
You know what, though? That sounds like someone who has it.
Yeah,
that
true.
Sounds like, you know, I don't think you or me being the bookies, Reggie Bone. But look, that's really funny because in that game, because I can totally understand it. And that's one of those things where I can imagine him down the pub with his mates, right? If that's what people with $1.4 million to lay a bet on do, yeah. Right? And saying to them, listen, like, there's no way they should have lost that game. When he put that bet on, the Chargers had a 98.8% chance of winning, because he did that live bet, because he didn't put it on before the game. He put it on like when it seemed like it was an absolute given. Flip that the other way, Reg, if you put it this way. The Jags had a 1.2% chance of coming back. I mean, if you have a spare 1.4 million, that's, you know, burning a hole in your pocket. And it's guaranteed 11K.
Yeah.
Put it down. But you know what it sounds like? That sounds like Iraqa every week, because we were out by 1.5 points on the spread. Because again, we went for the Cowboys to beat the Bucks, which they did outright, and that was sort of going against the grain. And again, you're 1.5. The thing is, everyone knows this, because I know your listeners like to place a bet on the horses and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you can lose your pants on some of these things, and some of them look like a given, but they're not. But that game was something else. I mean, that was the third largest blown lead in NFL history, 27-0 down, and to come back and win it. Not only that, this was a guy, Trevor Lawrence, who, when he came into the league as a quarterback, he kind of looks like me now. He's got shoulder-length hair, you know, and he was sort of seen like, oh, this guy, he just has to do the NFL for a couple of years, Reg.
Yeah.
He's going to get into the Hall of Fame then and sit back and relax. But he had a pretty tough time of it, because he had the coach, Urban Meyer, who went down in flames and went back to the college game. But now he's got a coach called Doug Peterson. He's won the Super Bowl with the Eagles. People look at Peterson, Reg, kind of like he's a bit of a pretender. Mm. I know I like watching these sort of old documentaries about old football managers. And some of them are really technical. And then some of them just go, right, lads, you know, do 20 push-ups and off you go. And that's kind of the way people see Peterson. But I don't think they should be seeing him that way. But more importantly for Trevor Lawrence, who's the quarterback, you know, who came back with that incredible win, is that he's an ex-quarterback himself. And in fact, he was a backup for the Packers when they had Brett Favre there. So it seems like a match made in heaven. That said, they're coming up against the Chiefs this week, and they're expected to get buzzsawed. But I don't know if that's going to be the case. But every game this week is going to be absolutely dynamite.
Yeah, absolutely. And we saw as well the Cowboys beating the Buccaneers. Tom Brady, is he done finally?
I don't know. Reg, I don't know. All right, let's just assume no. Because, I mean, he's 45 going on 70 or something. And we've been saying now for the last sort of 10 years, oh, it's his last season, he's going to go out in the flame and glory. The only thing is that I kind of look at Brady differently a bit now, because he went from being this sort of driven winner. He could win the Super Bowl. As long as he was playing, he was winning the Super Bowl, you know, with the Patriots. And then he went to the Bucs, and then he won it in his first year with the Buccaneers. And you're kind of thinking, oh, my, you know, was it Belichick, the coach for New England? Was it just all Brady who did it, you know? And you look at him, and there was all of these. There was a guy used to put out these famous videos where it'd show Brady throwing like a 5-yard pass, like all game, is he just dink and dunk his way down the field. And then there was all this debate about is he overrated and all this. But I don't think you can say it. But looking at it now, Reg, and like us here on the radio, again talking about, like, is he done? Like, is this it for him now? Is he going to keep doing it? You know, famously, Reg, and we spoke about it earlier in the season, and, you know, I won't touch too much on this because it's sort of gossip rag stuff. But, you know, he was famously married to the supermodel Gisele Bündchen. You know, that broke down. There was all this stuff in the media about how there was tension between them because he just simply wouldn't give up football. You know, he's kind of like that mate who just won't stop doing the wrong thing. And you're like, oh, dude, move on. So for Brady, he keeps doing it. And his last couple of seasons haven't been great. He's played quite well. Last season, he had a historic season. But, you know, you look at his superstar wide receivers, Reg, this season, Evans, who drops the ball when it's placed in the breadbasket, and you kind of look at it and go, you know, does he have the supporting cast? How long is he going to keep doing this? Is he going to have a bad offensive line one of these years who's going to put him on his backside and he's going to end up severely injured? I'm just wondering, does it taint his legacy slightly the longer he keeps going on? Because the only thing worse than leaving too early, and we've seen that happen a lot in sports, is leaving too late. I mean, look at Ronaldo. I mean, he seems to be sort of dragging on a bit too long now, going off to Saudi Arabia. Is Brady going to be subject to that kind of criticism? I don't know. He's still a dynamite player, but how long is too long for this guy?
It feels now it's getting to that point, you know. It definitely feels it's getting to that point. Retire gracefully, as they say. Okay, look, we have the divisional roundups this weekend. Should be worth keeping an eye on. You've been acca for that for us as well.
I do, yeah. I have a few outright wins as well. So we were really, really close last week. So look, I have the Niners to beat the spread and beat the Cowboys. There's only a spread of -3.5 there. And the Niners, if you look into the analysis, the stuff they're doing is amazing. Their quarterback is Mr. Irrelevant, the last pick. However, he should do the business. The Bengals to beat the Bills outright, that is against the spread. So be warned. But I think that game could go that way. This is the game that, you know, DeMar Hamlin, who had that heart attack on the field. This is basically a replay of that game. So there'll be an awful lot of weird emotions going on. But I tip the Bengals as the hot hand, even though the Bills are the number one seed. And finally, the Chiefs to beat the Jags. Now, the Chiefs are down to drug the Jags. I don't know if that's going to be the case. This could be an upset. But that's a three-timer, Reg. It's a 5.5 odds, so a tenner down, you get 62 back.
Very good. I know it's very early still. But give us your thoughts. What's your inkling towards Super Bowl Sunday? Who do you think is going to be there?
It's a very hard one, Reg, you know, because you look at the Niners and they're just looking absolutely fantastic. And then you look at the Chiefs and they're always in it every single year, but they're coming up against the Jags. So usually I'd go with like the Bills or the Chiefs in this type of scenario. But, you know, when you look at these games, there's so many upsets that could be on the cards because the Chiefs should win us, but then the Jags came back from that massive deficit. And you just don't know because Doug Peterson, this is what he prides himself on, is this sort of unpredictability, people not believing in him. And then if you go to the NFC side of things, the Philadelphia Eagles are playing and they're supposed to absolutely wax the New York Giants. But again, the Giants are a team that everyone just writes off like, no. But if you look at their quarterback, Daniel Jones, he had an absolutely record-breaking week last week. Mm. Now, it was against the Vikings who were seen as frauds. It's very, very hard to call. If you were to put your money on it and you were to sort of hold a gun to my head, I'd say, look, it's going to be the Kansas City Chiefs. Or I would actually go the Bengals. If the Bengals beat the Bills this week, I think they go all the way.
Sports and Durst is a company that connects sports stars with brands and sponsorships, here to shed some light on the business side of being an elite athlete. Co-founder Trevor Twamley joins us. Morning, Trevor. How are you?
Hi, Reggie. Thanks for having me.
Oh, great to have you. Great to have you. It's always good to get a little bit of a different insight into the world of sport and how it all operates. And a lot of our listeners will be very interested to hear how agency work, brand work, all that kind of thing happens for the players. Now, look, it's an area that has grown in leaps and bounds over the last number of years with all of the different types of commercial endorsements that are available for stars. Is there a lot of competition out there?
Listen, it's growing. You said it there. It's $65 billion in 21. It's grown to $113 billion in 2030. Competition is great. We built a platform during COVID because of the amount of talent that was coming to us looking for help, be it a GA person, an Olympian, or a pro footballer. So, yeah, there is competition. Our tech allows for talent to connect with brands and companies quite easily. Companies can go on, they can post an opportunity, they can pick 20, 30. I've one brand at the moment picking 100 talent, 50 in Ireland and 50 in the UK. So it's growing, it's great. We've 10 staff on Fitzwilliam Street Upper. And all rugby players are welcome, Reggie, if you know any.
Well, I know plenty, but the ones I know mightn't be any use to you anymore. We're probably a bit over the hill, but you've got the likes of James Lowe, Hannah Tyrrell, John Egan, Amber Barrett, Emily Coates, big names there on the side. But I'm interested in what you're saying there, because let's say back in my day, the idea was there was the old term agent, and maybe they looked after your contract negotiations. And for the very top sports stars, the very top players, there were endorsement opportunities. Maybe a brand like an O2 or a Vodafone might want them to be their ambassador. But for lower down the line, your average run-of-the-mill average player, there was nothing there. There was really no opportunities to make any money aside from what you were getting from your contract. Has that changed much? Is there opportunity for everybody now?
There were endorsement opportunities, maybe. Reggie, like we do we had a full day with Robbie Henshaw yesterday, so that we do that legacy stuff too. But the reality is social media, Instagram, Twitter, all these avenues now has opened up the world to every type of athlete. Elite is someone who's trying to be the best they can be. A brand, you know, you want to connect with that athlete, you can do it. Their engagement is important to companies. The authentic side of that is very important. So you can have 3,000 followers, but you can have an engagement of 25%. And your brand, if you're authentic, they'd want to connect with that athlete. So it has opened it up. It's great. And we have 93 different disciplines. We started out with one. We started out with a boxer. Then it was a rower. And then they're all coming to us. So like it's fascinating how the social media has grown the business. And in your day, it was the turn up for your shoot.
Yeah.
You got your image rights for the year for Vodafone. Then you had your social media. So that's all still there. But what has happened now is you can't hide with social media. So you have to look after it. You got to look after your brand, look after your brand's long-term, short-term. And so look, All good. We're growing. We're big eyes on America now. There's 530,000 student athletes in America that can take endorsements and sponsorships. And that, and the international students as well are going to be allowed. That's all part of the NIL ruling, name, image, and likeness. So our next stop is New York. We're quite big here and in England. We have some good talent in the States too, but we want to scale it over there big time.
Are you finding you have to re-educate the sports people on how they market themselves, maybe creating a little bit of content on social media?
Yeah, it is important. Now, it's not for everybody, right?
Yeah.
But I think if you do need to look after it. And we've all heard and seen cases in the past where athletes haven't looked after their brand. Now it's very much you have to nurture it. A brand, you know, your brand is something you do every day.
Yeah.
So Reggie, your brand is you played for Leinster, you played for Ireland, a stunning career. Now you've your sports show. That's part of your brand, part of your makeup.
Mm.
That's no different to any other athlete. Yeah, education is good, but generally it's you know, just little nudges to do what to do right, what to do wrong. They're supposed to be the best they can be on the pitch. It's not really their job, and that's where we come in.
Excellent. Okay, well, Trevor, it's a very interesting platform. I've had a look at your website. Interesting way of doing it, and I think it's the future, no question about it. So that's Sport Endorse is the name of the company. Trevor Twomley, co-founder of that. Thank you so much for telling us a little bit about your business and letting us inside that world. Good to chat to you. We'll chat again.
Thanks, Reggie. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Dublin Stock and Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken, and Reggie. Have a good weekend.